Thanks for joining us on this special edition of Newsmakers. I'm Fred Martino. Lily Eskelson-Garcia is president of the National Education Association, the nation's largest labor union. She began her career in education as a school lunch lady, later became Teacher of the Year in Utah, and now leads a professional association of 3 million educators. She is the first Latina to lead the NEA and one of the country's most influential educators. We are so pleased to have her today on Newsmakers. Lily, it is great to have you with us.
Oh, and I'm pleased to be here. And I love it when they say, you know, like largest labor union, because ours, we're educators. Ours is a labor of love. And some of our most passionate members of the National Education Association work in the schools here in Las Cruces. And so I'm especially honored to be here.
And we'll start on that positive note. Mm-hmm. You're here to celebrate something in Las Cruces. Lynn Middle School in Las Cruces is not a new school, but it's having a ribbon cutting because it's taken on the community school concept. This is an idea happening around the country. I know you're excited about it. Tell me about what it means and what it means to you.
This is maybe the most exciting thing I can imagine happening to public schools. I mean, I was, you know, in Salt Lake City teaching at a homeless shelter, actually, when we brought to life somehow this monster called No Child Left Untested, you know, where Democrats and Republicans held hands and went, you know, let's just make sure all kids get perfect scores on standardized tests. What could go wrong? Everything. And so 12 years later, we got to watch President Obama finally look and listen and say, it's more than a test. It's got to be looking at the whole child. You've got to look at things that a test can't measure. If you just limit it to that, you're going to be hurting kids. And he, thank goodness, signed that away and signed a brand new law called the Every Student Succeeds Act, ESSA. And now we're working across the country to say, what should we be measuring? What? How do we want to involve parents in making sure their kids are getting what they need? How are we untying the hands of creative teachers? Well, while everyone's doing that, you have some folks here in Las Cruces, the Las Cruces Education Association. You've got the New Mexico Education Association. You've got administrators, parent groups, advocates saying, while everyone's trying to work that out, what's stopping us from doing what we want to do at Lynn Middle School? There's nothing that says we can't just sit here and be creative. And what they've done is they've really studied this concept called a community school. How do you bring the whole community, even if you don't have kids in that school? How do you make that school the hub of your community? How do you work with social services that might say, we've got a health clinic way over here and a dentist way over there, and we've got kids that live in poverty? What if we put those services in the school? What if we have a parent resource center in the school? What if we open up the school to English classes for the parents and the grandparents and just people who live in the community? We're all taxpayers. Mm-hmm. We all helped fund that school. Shouldn't that school be for the whole community?
And in addition to being such a great resource for the children and for the community, I imagine that one other thing that you see as positive about this is that it emphasizes community responsibility. So much of the discussion about schools and student achievement today focuses exclusively on teachers, as if it's only teachers that are responsible for student success. Give me some thoughts on that.
That actually is a good way to describe it. It's quite absurd, and it's a kind of a factory model that I'm not sure works in very many factories. Mm-hmm. But it's okay. Here's a product. We call them children, but here's a product and here's the factory worker, and you just pour this much knowledge of math and reading into this head, and then they'll perform to specifications when they get to the end of the line. And if they don't, you must have not poured that in just right. Yeah.
And when you describe it like that, it sounds so
stupid.
Ridiculous,
yes,
but yet this is the narrative in
exactly,
our country.
Exactly.
What's happening at home. that the food that the child eats.
Did you come
that
to school
the,
hungry?
You know, on and on and on.
And by the way, in the most affluent families, I've taught in the suburbs of Salt Lake City, some very advantaged students, and I've taught at homeless shelters. I've taught kids with disabilities. I've taught gifted and talented kids. I've taught gifted and talented homeless kids with disabilities. They come to us. And I've seen affluent families that are under incredible stress, maybe a divorce in the family, maybe dad has cancer. You've got kids that have special needs on any given day that are not something that would ever show up on a test score. And when I would work with kids, I can tell you the times when that kid just needed, who was like thrashing out and really angry, but I knew that that wasn't normal for that child.
Yeah.
And so I could put my arm around Lonnie and I could say, something's going on, Lonnie. Let's talk about it.
Yeah. Kids are not widgets.
Yeah. And you know what? Lonnie didn't like turn his homework in that day or memorize what he needed to memorize for states and capitals, but I needed to give Lonnie something from my heart to let him know that he was valuable. And no matter how mad he was at someone, I couldn't let him hurt the other kids. They had to see that they were safe. But an educator, a teacher, a paraprofessional, the school nurse, a counselor, the principal. Think about the family of educators in that building. The one thing that I can tell you today that I hope I will have a different story next year to tell you is I know of no billionaires that are sinking a lot of money into something that says, let's trust our educators. Let's actually sit down with parents and say, what is it that you're looking for your child? What would you never want to lose in this school? And what do you want to see that could be better? Who's talking to the people that know the names of the kids, that love those kids? There are billionaire think tanks that say, let's have some kind of factory model with prizes for good test scores and punishments for bad test scores, so that you focus on fear and you look and you see your students and you go, okay, a student who doesn't speak English and has a disability, you're going to cost me money. You are going to cost me my bonus. That's what we want?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
The answer is what they're doing at Lynn Middle School, saying, you know what? Let the politicians do what the politicians do. And we've got a chance on the state level now, on the district level, to make things better. But let's not wait.
Yeah.
Let's have this atmosphere of joy in our schools that includes the parents, the administrators, the teachers, the counselors, the lunch ladies, the advocates. Let's bring in the faith-based groups. Let's bring in immigration rights groups to talk about, hopefully we'll still have a safe harbor with our immigrant dreamers. But you know, let's build something tailor-made for that community and designed by the people who know the kids.
But of course, as you know, a lot of work has to be done. You're doing a lot of work at the NEA, and while many of the politicians aren't necessarily talking to teachers, they're putting a focus on evaluating teachers. And the NEA and many other organizations and educators say that this is often unfair. As you know, in New Mexico, the state uses standardized tests for 50% of a teacher's rating. Some states use a much, much lower percentage and look at a lot more factors. Tell me about this and where this stands.
Let's go to, here's a crazy idea, research, science. It's like a university, isn't it? You know, like maybe people who know what they're talking about, that would be so nice sometimes. Let's go to the top performing countries in the world. We're always being told, look at our global competition. We've got to do this and this and this and this because of our global competition, whatever that means. Well, our global competition, the people that are often pointed to that do very well on many measures of education. Let's go to Finland Canada and Singapore. These are very different types of systems. And let's take a look at how they evaluate their teachers. I went to Finland in January, because that's a lovely time of year to to go to the North Pole. And I'm explaining, all right, so we're, you know, people are trying to say, what's the formula? What's the number? What, still looking at us as if you could put a number to what we do. And I said, you know, everyone's saying, how do we make it easy to fire a bad teacher? And they said, well, here's our idea. We make it impossible to hire a bad teacher. We put our resources in training the finest career teachers, and then we give them the resources to do their jobs, and we get out of their way, and they have this collaborative system that says the teachers decide amongst themselves, here's what we'll be teaching, here's what we'll be testing, here's what we do when we see these kids didn't get it, the kids are ready to go faster. They said, we are highly integrated, but it's the educators that select the materials, the books, the pacing, and they do what they do together, because then they regroup and they are able to say, all right, these children need something extra, you're going to take them, I'm going to take yours a little faster. So they are constantly working together. The same thing in Canada, the same thing in Singapore. When we asked about evaluations of teachers, they said, we evaluate constantly, but we have peer evaluations. We look at our students' work, but not saying you missed your cut score. We say, what is your expertise in intervening when you see that something's not working? Instead of going, well, I'd love to do something creative, but they told me I have to be in this book on page 73 today, so that's what I'm being held accountable for, and it's not working, and I know what I should be doing, but I got to be on page 74 tomorrow, even though I know that's wrong. So we want to do what top performing education systems do.
And I know you have reason for great hope at the state and district level. There have been politicians and administrators who've been listening, who said, let's go to the experts, let's go to the teachers
more
to find out what we need to do. But at the same time, there is great concern at the federal level with the Trump administration, and particularly the nomination of Betsy DeVos to be education secretary. Outline for me your concerns there.
You were right in framing that in terms of the hope that we have on the state level, even greater on the local level. And I will tell you, my greatest hope is on the building level. That's where that quiet revolution will happen. And there won't be news trucks there to cover it. It's just going to happen, because we are going to make it happen. Student to student, classroom to classroom, school to school. I will tell you, abandon all hope, ye who enter the beltway of Washington, D.C., and expect to find anything of common sense. I know people who never have followed like nomination hearings for a secretary of anything, who said, well, I'm hearing a lot of scary things about Betsy DeVos. It sounds like she's never stepped foot, that we know of, in an actual public school that she'll be responsible for. And some of the most important programs, like special education, that's a federal civil right. Title I schools that give extra funding for some of our children that live in poverty. High percentages of kids that live in poverty get special four services to them. Reading tutors, math tutors.
And ironically, this is one of the more amazing things about this for folks who follow her record in the state of Michigan, that while we have this enormous focus on accountability of public schools and public school teachers, her work in Michigan centered around ensuring that the charter schools and other schools that were in Michigan would not be accountable.
Exactly. And when we take a look at, again, what systems that are successful do, they focus on equitable resources and programs so that every child has a rich, whole child approach to what they can learn. Basic academics and literacy, yes, but the arts and sports and vocational career choices in their school. we look at a safe, respectful learning environment. And the federal government was key in getting from sea to shining sea laws that protect children from discrimination, race, religion, immigration status, LGBT status. Little girls get the same opportunities as little boys. People who have been traditionally discriminated against and sometimes harassed are protected by federal law thanks to the Department of Education.
And at that department level, of course, charter schools are public schools, but there's great concern about those schools often not having all of the same rules or the same accountability that other public schools have. There's also concern about funding on the federal level because there's even talk of this notion of vouchers and giving public money
to less accountability
to private schools and saying, well, we're not going to take money from public schools to do that, but there's additional federal money that could go to public schools that would now go to private schools. That really raises not only concerns I know among the NEA members, but really about legal issues as well.
Correct. And so different state laws have different laws about public funding for private schools or public funding for something called charter schools. And people believe that there's a thing called a charter school. And I've been into charter schools and that my own members helped develop.
Yeah.
They said, I've got this innovative idea for English language learners. I was an English language learner when I was a kid. Will the association help me with? And we've actually helped get some of these very unique programs off the ground because they said, if we can do it right here and work out all the bugs, then everybody could do this in any public school. That was the original intent of charter schools. Let's try something really different. Let's see if it works. Let's work the bugs out. If it can't work, then let's not pursue it. But if we can get something done, this is our incubator. Now it's an industry.
Yeah.
And that is what Betsy DeVos has promoted in Michigan. It isn't that let's get a really good idea and see if it works with public accountability. It's, oh look, here's a bunch of businesses. They have very high paid CEOs. We give them money. They say, yes, here's a slick brochure for mom and dad. Here's all the wonderful things that we may or may not do for your kids. And because of Betsy DeVos, if we don't do what we promised, you can't do anything about it.
So that's a very good point because you point out the diversity in charter schools, that there are charter schools that were created with the original intent, but now there are many charter schools which are using public money to fund a private
for-profit
company running the school.
Right.
This is so concerning to many people, and it also is part of the standardized testing industry, that there are state officials who are responsible for contracts for standardized tests who are on the boards of the testing company.
And who receive campaign contributions from companies
like that. It's a mess of conflict of interest issues that come up. You know, I know on a broader level, not just in private school issues or charter school issues, the NEA has raised alarm that ever since the election, there have been great concerns about disruption in all schools with the tone of the election. And I want to give you a chance to talk about that. We've talked about that before on the radio, and that there have been more incidents in schools all around the country since the election.
All around the country. When you look at the populations that receive protection against discrimination, it's because these were populations who had been harassed. There had been violence. There had been threats. There had been bullying. So on many different levels, the Department of Education has a responsibility to make sure that vulnerable students are protected. What we received during the campaign was alarming because we would have some of our members calling in saying, I need whatever you've got on bullying protection because I have a little girl in my class that wears a hijab who's Muslim. And I've got some of my kids saying, when Trump is elected, you have to go back to Afghanistan. And this is a little girl whose family and grandparents and everyone else were born in the United States. And if you spoke Spanish or if you had a Spanish last name, when Trump's elected, you're going to be sent back to Mexico. Little girls were being chased by little boys who would, there was a game called Let's Trump Them, and they little boys would grab little girls inappropriately. And it was this entire avalanche of disrespect, and it was, and the kids themselves were calling on this person who wanted to be our next president as their role model for that. So once the election was over, what we got was 10 times that. And people calling in saying, I've got children now who are afraid to come to school. They're afraid that now someone's going to knock on their door and take their grandmother. And when a lot of these calls would come in, they'd say, these are not undocumented kids. They're just scared because there was such an anti-immigrant rhetoric being thrown around. When's he going to build the wall, Miss Smith? Mm. You know, can I still go to church if I'm a Muslim? Can I still go to my, you know?
I'm so glad you gave those examples. What do you think someone watching right now can do to help teachers and students that are dealing with this kind of thing?
Well, what we're seeing and what makes me so proud to be a teacher and so proud to be a member of the National Education Association is with all of the good resources we have on how you can talk to large groups of kids about what's appropriate and what's not appropriate, a hug. I'm telling you, these educators, and that includes the school custodian to the principal to the lunch lady to the teacher, would put their arm around a kid and make sure that the other kids saw that and said, the first thing that a teacher has to do, an educator has to do, is to say, I am here to make sure you have a safe place to learn. You can come and talk to me no matter what happens. And to say that to everyone in the classroom, that it is not appropriate. And this is not the way that anyone in our school will be treated.
Okay.
No matter who's president, no matter who's governor, no matter who's whatever, this is what it means to be a member of this classroom and my expectations of you. It starts with that tone that says it is never acceptable.
Yeah.
And but the fact that we actually had children bullied in the name of someone who had been elected president is unprecedented. It has nothing to do with Republican or Democrat or independent. We've never had that happen before.
Yeah. And of course there are protests that are occurring all over the country and have been since the election. But as you know, and as President Obama illustrated so well, beyond protest, voter registration and lots of voter turnout is what is needed when it comes to elections. Do you think that's going to happen over the next 2 years before the next congressional elections and over the next 4 years before the next presidential election? And if you think so, how is it going to happen?
You know, just,
big question, I realize.
Yeah, it is, but that is the, if there's any silver lining to any of this. Those of us, I would tell my sixth graders, democracy looks like someone walking into a voting booth. You have to know who the candidates are, ask your parents questions. I loved every 4 years because that was my social studies lesson. And I didn't have to do anything except say, talk to your parents. What do you think the issues are? What are you hearing on? And without me, having to give my political opinion, there are a whole lot of people who have become very cynical about elections, about politics, and oh, they're all the same, and oh, it doesn't really matter. Oh, it does matter.
It sounds like what you're saying is that in addition to organized efforts that get to canvassing, get to voter registration, there has to be a lot of one-on-one
exactly.
going on in the country over the next few years.
People are going to be talking to each other. Folks that voted one way or the other are going to be saying, all right, were promises kept or broken? What did I believe? What is fake news? Fake news isn't, I have a different opinion. Fake news is somebody made this up, put it on the internet, and pretended like it was real.
Or in another case, it's not often called fake news, but is something that's actually true, but taken completely out of context.
Exactly.
And not giving additional
exactly.
detail so that would change the meaning.
People are paying
yeah.
attention.
Yeah.
And like never before, they are seeing, wow, if I had showed up, if I had made a different decision, or there are people who said, oh my gosh, you know, I had no idea this was going to happen. I would have voted if I had. Folks are now saying it really does matter that you pay attention, and elections have consequences. But I'll tell you what, democracy also looks like the day after the election. And yes, there are protests, and maybe that's where it begins, but that's not where it ends. Now you hold those elected people accountable. You write your congressman, you email, you phone call, you show up at their office. They all have offices in their states. And you say, this is what you promised, and here's what I'm seeing. Here's what I saw the president do, and I don't approve of it, and I want you to vote against something. You use your power as a citizen, and you let your voice be heard. Democracy doesn't end at the election. That's where it begins.
Oh, that's a good place for us to end, although I wish we would have had an hour rather than a half hour.
It can't be time yet. It can't be.
Lily Eskelson Garcia, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you at home as well. Take care and talk to us. Continue the dialogue online. Email us anytime with your thoughts about our programming and your comments for our website, feedback@nmsu.edu. Have a great week.